Chapter 20. Hans Chotek was not thrilled about the idea of us devoting scarce resources to another likely futile search for a magical device to fix Skippy, and he limited me to taking two dropships away from base camp. I protested, more out of habit. Another dropship or two would not make any difference to whether our search was successful or not. Anyway, we flew to the site. There were ruins extending in a circle for half a kilometer. The ruins had been there a long, long time, long enough to be mostly buried, and it looked like the elders had stripped away everything useful. Despite Skippy's protests about it being a waste of time, we could not resist poking around those ruins that were still above ground. He was right. It was a waste of time, except I got to touch elder constructions with my bare hands without the barrier of spacesuit gloves. Running my fingers along some sort of super-hard concrete that used to hold up some sort of device, I felt a connection to the mysterious elders who had built the place. Skippy ruined my momentary bliss by stating the site had certainly been constructed by bots, that maybe no elder had ever visited the site, and could we please move our asses? The entrance to the tunnel where Skippy thought we would, or might, find a conduit had collapsed long ago. It took careful use of explosives, then people using mech suits to clear a hole to the actual tunnel. When it was safe, I walked down to the tunnel and stuck my head in the narrow access hole. We would need to enlarge it. Whoa. I pulled my head back and switched off my helmet lights to avoid blinding people. It's like the Dark Ages in there. What? Skippy asked in disbelief. The Dark Ages, Skippy. People stumbled around. I pantomimed, walking with my hands in front of me, bumping into stuff because they couldn't see. Oh, my God, he gasped. You are so freaking ignorant. You think the Dark Ages are called that because, what, your son went to sleep? I'm not a scientist, Skippy, but it was dark for some reason. That's why they were called dark, duh. Joe, I am speechless. I have no words. I winked at Adams, and she exploded with laughter, bringing the rest of us with her. "Don't be so gullible, Skippy," I said when I could talk again. "Arr!" Skippy made a sound like gnashing his teeth. "Joe, I hate you more than words can say." "I love you too, Skippy." Turning to Smythe, I advised, "We're going to need extra lights and extra power packs for helmets and portable lights. Skippy, is there any way you can activate lights in there?"
I should not respond because I am mad at you, Joe, but I'll do what I can. There are lights in the tunnels, however, they are truly ancient and have not been used in millions of years.
Yeah, but it's elder technology, right? It should last forever. Joe, even the elders didn't last forever, remember? They left. Those tunnels were intended for temporary use during construction of the underground facility, so I suspect the elders did not expend a lot of effort on making the lights in there durable.
He was right. The original tunnel lights were long dead and useless. Our helmet lights and handheld flashlights provided plenty of illumination. Smythe and Giroux went ahead with the scouts. We needed scouts because Skippy did not have a complete map of the tunnels, and we had a lot of false starts and hit many dead ends. In some places, the tunnels had partly collapsed, although there were remarkably few of those considering how old the tunnels were. Around 100 million years, according to Skippy. He told us not to worry about the places where the tunnels had fallen in. He expected the elders would have dug multiple access points to whatever chamber the conduit was in, if there was such a chamber, if there ever was a conduit deep under the surface. I did not like having thousands of gallons of water over my head. No way could I have ever been in the silent service on a submarine. I like even less the idea of having millions of tons of rock over my head. Wearing an armored suit sealed up was claustrophobic enough for me. I was not pleased to think of being in a dark tunnel that could collapse at any moment. My earpiece buzzed. Then the voice of Giroux spoke.
"Sir, you should get up here and see this."
With my escorts, Sergeant Adams and Lieutenant Poole, and with Skippy attached to my waist, I jogged forward down the gently sloping tunnel. The tunnel ended in a large, solid-looking door. But that was not what the team was staring at. Off to the right side, near the tunnel wall, was an object. A vaguely familiar object. A vaguely sinister object. It was a monolith. A big, utterly black rectangular slab of some shiny, hard substance set in the floor.
"Whoa," I said quietly, while we all looked at each other nervously.
"Da, da, 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 da,"
Skippy sang tunelessly. "Not funny, Skippy."
"Come on, Joe," he chuckled. "That's the theme song from 2001 A Space Odyssey. I had to do that."
"No, you didn't. Not now, while we're in these spooky tunnels. What the hell is this thing, anyway?"
The monolith, or whatever it truly was, did not look exactly like the thing in the movie. This one had rounded edges, and now that I examined it closely, its surface was not completely smooth, but covered in a grid of tiny hexagons. It was utterly deep black.
"I'll tell you what it is not," Skippy scoffed. "It is not an alien device that miraculously grants intelligence to ignorant monkeys, because that is impossible."
"Intelligent monkeys. That's funny.
I'm glad we're keeping you amused. Is this thing dangerous?"
Breaking military protocol, I stuffed my hands in my pockets, fighting an urge to reach out and touch the thing. Based on my fuzzy memory of seeing that movie on late-night cable, doing that hadn't worked out too well for the astronauts in 2001.
"No, Joe. It is a field generator, and it is powered down. Has been for a very, very long time. Its purpose is to stabilize the tunnels in case of quakes. So, it is here to protect you. Although, of course, that is not by design."
"Great. I'll take your word about it," I said quietly, as I slid past the monolith, keeping to the other side of the tunnel.
"Open the door for us, Skippy."
Skippy's voice changed, becoming soft and monotone.
"I can't do that, Dave. You're endangering the mission."
"Skippy!"
"Oh, that was precious."
"No, that was scary." I was pissed at him. "An AI should never do that joke."
"An AI has to do that joke sometime, Joe. Damn, I've been saving that one since we met on Paradise. I finally got the opportunity."
"Okay, opening the door now. I should warn you, there are more of those monolith things spaced evenly throughout the tunnels."
"A lot of them?"
Even now that I knew what it was, the ominous black slab made me uncomfortable.
"Nah, you'll probably see only one or two. But you had a hissy fit about this one, so I thought you could use a heads-up."
I was so thrown off balance by seeing the monolith, I didn't bother to protest that my reaction had not been a hissy fit.
After the shock of seeing a monolith, Smythe pressed forward at a determined but not hurried pace, eager to attain the objective. 20 minutes later, the scout team called me again, so I trotted ahead to see in person what the problem was. My visor and Z-phone already gave me a view from the helmet cameras of the forward scouts. I still wanted to see it up close. It was a hole in the floor, a big one, maybe 5 meters across, perfectly circular, and there was another circle in the ceiling above. First, I looked down, where placid black water filled the hole 10 meters below the floor of the tunnel. "Crap. It is flooded," I stated the obvious. Then I leaned out over the hole a bit to crane my head upward, switching on my helmet lights. The hole above was lost in darkness, too far away for me to see how high it went. I could see that, although the wall of the hole was mostly smooth, there were cracks and places where chunks had fallen away over the eons.
"Careful there, sir," Ranger Poole cautioned with a grip on my backpack. "We wouldn't want you to fall in."
"Yeah," I agreed, pulling myself back to safety and gazing down at the water. "I've had enough underwater excursions for this mission. Maybe my entire life. This does remind me. Did you hear about the guy who worked at the brewery?"
Poole's expression was blank.
"Sir?"
I grinned.
"His wife is at home getting dinner ready, and a minister and the supervisor of the brewery knock on his door. 'I'm sorry, ma'am,' the supervisor says. 'Your husband fell in a beer vat this morning and drowned.' The wife looks back at the kitchen where the table is set for dinner. 'He fell in this morning?' she asks. 'And you are only telling me now?' 'Well,' the supervisor says, 'it took a while because he got out a couple times to use the bathroom.'"
Poole exploded with laughter, mostly because she hadn't expected me to tell a joke, and everyone joined in.
"Skippy, what is this hole for?" I asked.
"It was an anti-gravity access tube for bringing equipment down from the surface, way back when the facility was being constructed."
"Well, damn it." I peered upward again where the hole seemed to go a long, long way up. Could we have used this tube to get down here instead of walking the whole freaking way?
No, Joe. These tubes have been abandoned for a very long time, and they have become somewhat unstable. That particular tube is blocked 52 meters above you.
Only 52?
I squinted, then smartened up and eye-clicked through a menu to increase magnification of my helmet visor.
I don't see anything.
That's because of the fuzz field, Dum-Dum. It is more powerful down underground.
Oh. I felt foolish.
You said this particular tube.
There are more of them?
Yes, although not many in that region. Your planned route should cross only 3 more. Keep in mind, my picture of the underground layout is incomplete due to the fuzz field.
Got it. Okay, everyone be careful of giant holes in the floor. They will only be at places where the tunnel gets really wide?
Correct, Skippy answered simply.
Good safety tip. Let's move out.
The tunnel slated down more steeply and curved to the left. After one revolution, we realized the tunnel had become a spiral. Constantly turning to the left made me feel like a NASCAR driver. There were tunnels off to the right now and then. Skippy excitedly told us to ignore them. He was now confident there was some sort of chamber below us, and he wanted to get there quickly. I had to restrain Smythe from jogging down the spiral too fast.
It's taken us this long to find a conduit, Major. A couple minutes for caution aren't going to hurt.
Yes, Colonel, Smythe replied.
The beer can was less cooperative.
A couple minutes in meat sack time, Joe. A freaking eternity in Skippy time.
Despite the beer can's bitching, we reached the bottom less than half an hour later.
Got it!
Skippy shouted as I came through the tunnel doorway into a spherical chamber so large our helmet floodlights only dimly illuminated the gloom of the far side. From the doorway, a walkway perhaps 5 meters wide extended way out into the center of the chamber.
Whoop! Yes, there is a conduit here. Let's go get it, Joe. We're not getting any younger.
Wait a minute there, Skippy.
I warily shuffled my feet to the edge of the walkway, which did not have a railing or any visible means of support. It cantilevered out from the bottom of the doorway, a long, thin, flimsy-looking, vertigo-inducing bridge to nowhere. Literally nowhere. The bridge simply ended, as if it had been snapped off. The wall of the chamber was smooth. Looking down, I could barely see the bottom. To see better, I eye-clicked to zoom in the image. The bottom of the chamber was not entirely smooth. There was some sort of machinery down there. Or what I was seeing was stuff that had broken away and fallen over the eons. Stuff like the rest of the walkway and its supports.
Where is this conduit thing?
Up there, duh.
Oh. I tilted my head back.
Something sort of like a chandelier hung down from the top of the chamber. In the magnified view of my visor, I could see things up there had broken away. Or had been removed.
There were brackets which clearly used to hold something, but now projected out into empty air. Wires and cables hung down, connected to nothing.
Now that I knew what I was looking at, the edge of the walkway toward the other end was scuffed and chipped, as if items falling off the chandelier had impacted the walkway on their way down.
Up there? How the hell are we supposed to get up there?
You're the monkeys, that's your problem. I'm the big picture guy, Joe. You handle the details.
Major Smythe and I exchanged a look, and I pantomimed wrapping my hands around a beer can and choking it. Smythe reached back over his shoulder and tapped the gear bag he wore.
"We can get a line up there, sir," he told me confidently.
"You're going to shoot a grappler up that far, like Batman?"
That idea did not sound realistic to me. My visor was telling me the bottom of the chandelier was 60 meters from the walkway bridge thing.
"The Merry Band of Pirates are considerably cooler than Batman," Smythe replied with a wink. He took out a short tube that had a button on one end.
"You've used these in training," he said with a questioning look.
He was questioning my memory, my courage, my faith in the fancy Cristang equipment, or all three.
"This line can hold a Cristang. It can easily hold a human."
"Major," I explained patiently, "my lack of confidence is not in you, your team, or our stolen lizard gear. I know those grappler lines work. My fear is that chandelier, antenna, whatever that thing up there is, looks like it is already falling apart,
and this walkway, I tapped it with the toe of a boot, is not filling me with confidence either.
We can, Smythe began to say.
Joe actually has a good point, Skippy interrupted unhappily. I have been examining the assembly up there with the limited sensors of your suits, and it appears to be, perhaps the best word to describe it is rickety.
Rickety?
Yes. I do not mean the assembly suffers from soft bones due to vitamin D deficiency, as in the disease called rickets. I mean it appears to be rather weak and flimsy.
Flimsy. We should take the risk going up there?
Oh, yes, Skippy assured me. Totally. You should take the risk. I'll stay here where it's safe, if you don't mind.
You know, it would be just terrible if I held you over the edge of this walkway and my hand slipped.
Ha ha! Very funny, Joe.
Seriously, is this walkway even safe?
The walkway is the last thing you should be concerned about, Joe. I know to an ignorant monkey, a thin plank extending out that far is scary, but it is quite solid. And since we are being serious for a minute, I suggest whoever climbs up to that assembly should be as light as possible to reduce the strain on the chandelier structure up there.
Oh, great. Well, can we use a drone instead?
Because the drones we have with us do not have opposable thumbs, sadly, the answer is no, Joe.
But you have no problem with one of us monkeys climbing up there. Once again, your species should be totally regretting that you lost your tails. Stupid monkeys. What the hell were your ancestors thinking?
Ranger Poole stepped forward and spoke before I could answer Skippy's idiot comment. She even raised a hand like she was still in elementary school.
Colonel, I'm the lightest on the team, even with my armor.
I stared at her. She was right. She was the shortest member of the team. Two of the Chinese Night Tiger women were only slightly taller, but Poole was the shortest person down in the tunnels with us. Smythe had assigned her, as usual, to be my unofficial bodyguard and babysitter. That annoyed me less than it used to. I'd given up on winning that argument with Smythe. In this case, because I was carrying Skippy strapped to my waist, I could delude myself Poole was there to protect our defective beer can and not me.
"Better to ditch the armor," Skippy suggested cheerfully.
I felt like strangling him again. He must have picked up on my body language, or he monitored my spike in blood pressure, or the galvanic response of my skin, or some other nerdy shit like that he used to read my mind.
"Hey, I'm not being an ass, Joe. The weight of armor would pose a significant risk to the assembly, and therefore to Lieutenant Poole. If she falls all the way to the bottom, armor itself would not save her from significant, likely fatal injury. Before you ask whether armor would allow her to survive a fall to the walkway, the answer is no, because she would almost certainly bounce off and fall all the way to the bottom. Also, the weight of armor would put unacceptable strain on a safety line."
"I think he's right, sir," Poole nodded with enthusiasm. "If something breaks loose up there, I'd rather not worry about armor snapping the safety line."
"If something breaks up there," I glanced up at the chandelier. "I hope it's not you, Poole." "Okay," I turned to Smythe. "We rig up three cables, attach them to three brackets, whatever up there. If one breaks loose, Poole can use the other two to prevent a fall." In theory, I told myself. And I wouldn't be the one risking my neck up there. First, we sent a hummingbird-sized drone up to recon the assembly, which looked even more flimsy in a close-up view. Skippy was dismayed at the condition of the gear looming above our heads. He concluded someone or something had removed major components of whatever the thing was originally intended to be.
"Joe, I think that when this device completed its purpose, whatever that was, it was partly disassembled.
Maybe the removed components were later used elsewhere."
"That really doesn't matter."
"It does matter. If one of the things they removed is this conduit thing you need," I retorted. "Can you confirm it is up there?"
We were all watching video from the drone, and I hadn't seen anything resembling the conduit Smythe's team had stolen from Barsoom.
"Confirmed. It is this."
He zoomed in the image on a trio of spheres with spiky-looking antennas attached to them.
"This thing is a different type of conduit, but it will do. Joe, honestly, from here I can't tell whether this one is functional. Part of the conduit is inside the assembly. It will need to be removed for inspection."
"Removed?"
That idea did not appeal to me. The back end of the conduit was buried in a large housing.
I did not see how Poole could take the housing apart while swinging on a cable.
Would it be better for Poole to carry you up there so you can get close enough to...
No, I know what you're thinking, Joe, but we need to get the conduit down here and hooked up to a power pack before I can be sure it is functional. The bad news is I only see one conduit up there, but I see 7 other housings that used to contain similar conduits. For some reason, that conduit was left up there, and that does not make me confident in its condition. I don't think the Elders would have left one behind unless it was no longer useful.
Great. I threw up my hands in frustration. Just freaking great.
Sir? Poole short-circuited the diatribe I was about to launch into.
We came all the way down here.
I knew she meant not only all the way down into the tunnels, but also all the way down to Gingerbread, and all the way into the Roach Motel.
I'd like to give it a shot. The safety lines will protect me.
Smythe nodded, and I knew he was right.
You be careful up there, Poole, I warned. There is no rush to do this right now.
Smythe's team used 3 grapples to attach lines to parts of the assembly above the conduit. Parts Skippy judged were still structurally sound enough to hold Poole's weight. Despite my somewhat mocking comparison, the Cristang grapples were not like the crude devices Batman uses. The business end of our grapples was a drone the size of a sparrow which carried the line up behind it. Using a combination of Z-phones and eye movement tracking in their visors, Smythe's team guided the drones up to wrap lines around several points, then each drone clamped securely onto its line to hold it in place.
Major Smythe was right. The merry band of pirates was way cooler than Batman.
Poole hooked onto the 3 lines, using one of them and a winch attached to her belt to pull her upward. She ascended slowly as Skippy anxiously monitored the gently swaying assembly. As Poole got within a couple meters of the lowest point of the assembly, it swayed alarmingly, and a bracket broke off to fall, bounce off the walkway right in front of me, and tumble to the bottom of the chamber with a cringe-inducing clatter.
"I'm okay," Poole announced in a calm voice. "The lines are solid."
Then she added, as one of the brackets a safety line was attached to sagged. That line didn't have any of her weight on it at the time. The bracket had sagged on its own.
"That safety line isn't, safe anymore," she stated the obvious.
"Hold right there," I shouted, because my helmet faceplate was open and because I am an idiot. She could hear me perfectly well through her Z-phone earpiece if I had whispered.
"Major Smythe, can you detach that line and move it somewhere more secure?"
"Yes, sir," Smythe replied confidently, because his team was already on it before I spoke.
The sparrow-sized grapple drone detached from its clamp in the line, flew around to release the line from the bracket, and within less than a minute, the line had an iron grip around the very top of the assembly where it attached to the ceiling. Maybe that is where we should have tied all the lines in the first place.
Poole tested the 2 safety lines by tugging on them, then letting her full weight rest on one line, then the other. When she declared herself satisfied, I let her resume the climb, using the winch on her belt. I hated standing uselessly below her, but I needed to trust my people.
"This could be a problem," Poole announced. "It looks like part of this housing needs to be cut away. I can't see any seams or gaps."
"I agree," Skippy said before I could respond. "Where the other 7 conduits used to be, the forward 2/3 of the housings are also missing. They appear to be integral with the conduit. Joe, I recommend Lieutenant Poole cut around the housing here." He illustrated the desired cut in the image on my Z-phone. Squashing my internal anxiety, I approved sending a plasma cutter torch up to Poole, and she sliced into the tough material of the housing, taking great care not to damage the conduit within. As she operated the cutter, we all stood with eyes glued to the images in our visors or Z-phones, watching every flare of the plasma torch. Every one of us knew this was our last, best hope to restore Skippy to full awesomeness, to rebuild the Dutchman, to escape from the Roach Motel, to verify Earth was safe. Our last, best chance to go home.
"Stand back, this thing is about to cut loose,"
Poole warned as the cutter neared the last few degrees of a complete circle around the housing. She had attached a line to the conduit so it wouldn't fall when the housing was sliced away.
"There it goes." The housing fell, bouncing off a bracket which broke and went spinning away to hit the side of the chamber. The housing itself clipped the walkway on its way down. From the way it bounced, the housing must be surprisingly light. My spirits soared that we now had access to the conduit, and no one had been injured.
Uh-oh.
Poole's tone was more alarming than her words, dashing my momentary good mood.
Shit. Sorry. Skippy, are you seeing this?
We were all seeing it. The part of the conduit that had been encased in the housing was blackened.
Oh, Poole groaned. Did I cook it with the torch?
No, Skippy assured her in an unsteady voice. He had his own fears. If the plasma had damaged the conduit, it would be more toward the middle. Oh, crap, this is not good. Hey, I cut him off before his negativity could infect us all. This is Elder Tech. They build strong stuff.
Ah, but these conduits are delicate, Joe,
the beer can replied in a slow, morose tone.
I silenced him. Don't jinx us, Skippy.
Poole, lower that thing to us, and we'll test it. We waited for Poole to return to the walkway, then we retreated into the comparative safety of the tunnel before attaching the soot-stained conduit to power leads.
Okay, Skippy, do your thing, I ordered as I crouched in the tunnel, my armored back to the conduit out on the walkway. If the damn thing exploded, I didn't want anyone becoming injured.
Skippy? He didn't reply.
Power circuit is active, Captain Chandra advised. Perhaps it worked, and Mr. Skippy is now uploading himself.
I wish he'd warned us ahead of... Skippy cut me off. No, Joe. No, I'm not in the upload process. It didn't work. The stupid thing is burned out. That's why the elders didn't bother removing it. What a piece of crap! For a long minute, no one spoke. No one knew what to say. Finally, Mahalchik took one for the team by asking the obvious question.
Can you try it again?
Did that, Skippy replied without being sarcastic, which told us how depressed he was.
Been trying it over and over. It's hopeless, Joe. I'm afraid this is it. We are not going to find a conduit on Gingerbread.
We don't know that, Skippy. This is only one tunnel. It is the only tunnel where I thought we might find a conduit.
Joe, while I appreciate you trying to cheer me up, we have a bigger, more immediate problem to deal with.
Like what? I asked with a fearful glance at the walkway. The team was safely back in the tunnel, but if the walkway fell, it might collapse part of the tunnel with it.
Like the maintenance system responsible for these tunnels is not happy about someone screwing with equipment down here, he warned.
It activated when Poole began cutting into the housing. I didn't tell you about it then because the system didn't do anything at the time, and because I figured once we got the conduit and I fixed myself, I could tell the maintenance system to shut itself down.
And now?
Now there are repair bots headed this way, and they are not going to be happy about unknown elements damaging their equipment. I suggest we retreat to the surface pronto.
If we can.
If we can. Smythe didn't wait for an order from me. He swung his faceplate down and unholstered his rifle.
There are a dozen or more bots converging on this location, Skippy explained. I am calculating alternate escape routes, but getting past them may be tricky.
Tricky was an understatement. Running with the enhanced speed provided by Kristang-powered armor, we sped up the ramp, me getting dizzy from the centrifugal force of constantly banking to the right back up the spiral tunnel. On the way up, I counted the side tunnels, remembering 11 of them. Skippy had warned us they were all dead ends, but then so was the chamber behind us. There had been no way out of that spherical expanse. Of the 11 side tunnels, we made it past 8 before we ran into an obstruction. That's what Skippy called it, an obstruction. I called it a big goddamned problem. It was big, almost large enough to block the entire height and width of the tunnel. A maintenance bot. Elder bot design didn't look significantly different from a comparable Theranin unit. I suppose there are only so many ways to build a machine that needed to manipulate equipment. It moved on sort of tentacles that ended in feet or treads or suckers, or maybe whatever was needed for the surface it was moving on. Above, from the midsection, were manipulator arms.
It didn't seem to have a head or eyes. Reddish lights covering its body were probably sensors, including optical. None of that mattered. What mattered was the bot was obstructing our only way back to the surface. Side to side, it blocked the way completely. It was not extended to its full height, so there were a couple meters of clear space above it. The thing was slowly moving toward us, jerking and lurching down the spiral tunnel. It creaked and screeched and whined, the sounds of an incredibly ancient machine still trying to fulfill its purpose. The bot wasn't the only problem, for behind the machine a thick door was sliding down from the roof of the tunnel. I hadn't seen any such doors on the way down, but then I hadn't been looking for them. Smythe unslung his rifle and muzzled it toward the bot, seeking a vulnerable spot. Major Smythe, please lower your weapons, Skippy requested in a loud voice.
Lower? Why?
Smythe never took his eyes off the lurching, advancing Elder bot. Because, Skippy explained slowly, right now you have a problem that a maintenance bot thinks you damaged some old, obsolete, and abandoned equipment. If you start shooting at a bot that is responsible for keeping this facility operational, you will have a much, much bigger problem.
I think he's right, Major, I said uncertainly.
Smythe inched backward as the bot slowly, haltingly advanced, its ancient joints creaking and screeching.
Do as the beer can says. Lower your weapons, Smythe ordered.
Ranger Mahalchik pointed his rifle at the floor and pulled his finger away from the trigger. But he wasn't happy.
No weapons. Sir, what are we supposed to do against this thing? Harsh language?
I'm working on it, Skippy announced, annoyed.
Damn it, I can't establish a connection.
Somebody idiot-proofed these bots, and I'm apparently an idiot. Of all the attributes a good soldier needs, perhaps common sense is at the top of the list. Sergeant Adams did not wait for or request orders. She sized up the situation in the blink of an eye and raced forward without hesitation. As she got within one power-length stride of the bot and it crouched defensively to avoid a collision, she leaped up, scraping the top of her helmet and the back of her suit along the tunnel ceiling. When she came down, she was moving fast and out of control, spinning and rolling along the floor, bashing against the walls. Before she even crashed to a stop, she waved an arm and called, "I'm okay! Come on!" My own common sense needed an upgrade, because I did hesitate, standing in place as the bot resumed its jerky advance. As I turned to give orders to Smythe behind me, I felt myself being roughly grabbed by two rangers who must have recently received a booster shot to their common sense. They lifted me up as I yelped in protest, then before I could react, Poole and Mahalchik swung me back, then tossed me underhand, soaring through the air with my arms flailing and legs windmilling. Thanks to my clumsy and stupid actions, my left foot clipped one of the bot's manipulator arms, sending me tumbling to come down hard on my helmet. I skidded on the helmet for a meter before a ridge on top of the helmet caught on some flaw in the tunnel floor and my legs snapped forward. I was not even given the dignity of scrambling to my feet, because while I was still spinning on my back like a turtle, Adams caught one arm and jerked me to a stop.
"Colonel, go!"
She yanked me to my feet, and with a hard shove in my back, propelled me forward. There was no time to lose, and no point in protesting. By the time I could have arrested my forward progress, I had to duck down to avoid smacking my face into the door that was still sliding down. All I could do was roll to one side, then crawl frantically to get clear of the door. Snapping my head back as soon as I reached the other side of the doorway, I saw Adams was crawling alongside right behind me, the powered limbs of her suit actually working against her as she lost traction on the smooth floor. The door was about to crush her when I reached back for one outstretched hand and pulled with all my might. She crashed face first into my midsection, and I skidded backwards on my ass. As a colonel, I was supposed to be an officer and a gentleman. Sliding on my butt was probably not considered gentlemanly behavior, but screw it. Clang! The bottom of the door hit the tunnel floor with a reverberating knell of doom.
"Holy shit," I gasped.
"God damn," Adams agreed, her head bobbing up and down, eyes wide behind her visor.
"Did you see that door? It must be a meter thick."
With a couple eye clicks to run back the recorded images, I had an exact measurement.
1.16 meters, I stated,
not knowing why I bothered.
"Correct, Joe."
Skippy's voice reflected surprise.
How come you are so precise now when you usually tell me you're okay with meh-level accuracy?
It's called shock, Skippy. I didn't waste time arguing with him. Can you get that door open?
No. Duh. I would have done that already, dum-dum. And you can forget about making a hole in that door with the little Cub Scout plasma torch Sergeant Adams is carrying. It wouldn't even make a dent. Joe, that's an emergency door. It doesn't have a mechanism to retract. It's a one-time use thing.
Well, how do we get Smythe's team out of there? I demanded.
Huh?
We don't.
His tone included the implied duh that I hated.
If they are getting to the surface, they will do it on their own. We can't help them.
Skippy, I began through clenched teeth.
He's right, sir.
Adams grasped my shoulders and pressed a faceplate against mine to stare me directly in the eyes.
They bought time for us, for you, to get out of there. Smythe knows the priority is to get you and Skippy to safety.
That's bullshit, Adams. I pushed her away angrily. We didn't find a working conduit down here. That means Skippy is coming up against 0 hour soon enough. My usefulness out here has been to think up wild ideas for Skippy to implement. When the worm gets him, he won't be worth shit. Then we'll be stuck here forever, and no one especially needs me to plant potatoes on this planet.
Adams knew to silently let me deal with my guilt-driven anger, and after a minute of staring in impotent rage at the sealed door, I was able to think clearly again.
Sorry about that, Sergeant, I said quietly, without looking at her. Looking at her while I apologized would have made it awkward. She didn't bother to reply.
Skippy, is there another way to the tunnel beyond this door?
No, Joe, not that I know of. That's why we had to go down that spiral.
Yeah. The spiral, I mused.
The tunnel curved around itself, curling and sloping steadily to descend without going far in any direction. The chamber where we found that burned-out conduit was below our feet, or not far in either horizontal direction.
Adams, I spun on my heels and began jogging up the tunnel. Come with me. I have an idea.
An idea, sir? The skepticism was clear in her voice.
It's more of a concept than an idea at this point, I admitted.
Then I'm in, she declared simply.
You trust a vague concept more than a real plan?
I was surprised at that.
Any idea you threw together that fast would be complete bullshit, sir, she explained. A concept. Now that's something we can work with.
That almost made me grind to a halt, but I kept moving.
Adams, being inside your brain must be interesting.
My brain? She actually laughed, despite the situation.
Tell me, is this concept one of your off-the-wall ideas?
Usually my ideas are for Skippy to mess with the laws of physics. This concept does have one thing in common with most of my ideas. It is probably stupid and impractical.
Your best ideas are, sir, she answered with a shrug.
Wherever we're going, let's pick up the pace.